The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I've been exploring the hindrances, in the last few weeks that I've been here. And the hindrances are kind of a collection of states of mind that the Buddha highlighted or pointed to that tend to get in the way of our meditation practice. They get in the way of our ability to settle our minds down. The word hindrances is often used because they're seen to kind of hinder. They hinder our ability to just stay with being here in the present moment. The five hindrances are sense desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness, and doubt. And I've been talking about one a week, so this week I'm talking about sloth and torpor, sleepiness and dullness, that kind of state of mind. So another thing to mention about the term hindrance, another word that can be used to translate the term. The term is nivarana. The Pali term is nivarana. And it literally means covering. And so these states of mind that are challenging for us tend to cover or obstruct or obscure a kind of the possibility of a natural clarity of mind. And so we can think of them as visitors, rather than somehow being inherent to us. And so we can think of them as states of mind that come and go. And because they are states of mind that come and go, we can work with them. Another important point about the hindrances as a group is that while the Buddha talked about them as hindrances, he said, yes, these states get in the way. They obstruct our ability to see clearly. They cover our natural clarity of mind. He also said that we can be mindful of them, and that basically they hinder us, they are hindrances, only when we are lost in their energies, unaware of them as energies happening in the present moment. And so there's a whole section of the Buddha's instructions on mindfulness where he talks about how to work mindfully, be mindful of these states of mind. He recommends noticing when they're present. Just knowing, oh, sleepiness is present. Ill will is present. Doubt is present. Just that simple knowing, this is happening. This is a state of mind that is happening in the present moment. Just that is incredibly powerful because it takes us from the place of being lost in what the story perhaps or the narrative of that energy or beliefs about that energy. You know, with sense desire, our beliefs about that energy tend to be, I need this thing in order to be happy. We don't often just notice, wow, this is what sense desire feels like. It's a very different relationship to that energy, to simply know, oh, this is what's happening right now. This is what's happening in this moment. And that actually is that movement to come back and be with the whatever's happening in the moment is the way that the deepening of understanding how our minds work, the understanding of how we get caught, pulled around by our minds. It's when we're not aware, when we're not clearly present and knowing what's happening in the present moment, that our habits of mind tend to run the show. They prompt us to do this or that, or have us believing this or that. I need to get this to be happy. I need to get rid of this to be happy. I'm too tired to be present. I'm too tired to do these things I have to do. I better gear up this energy. What, you know, how can I do it? these beliefs, the stories that come with our relationships to what's happening, tend to be the motivation for how we navigate the world and tend to be connected to how we struggle, suffer, how we have unease in our lives. When we can kind of settle back and recognize, oh, sense desire is happening right now, without believing all the stories about sense desire and just feel that energy, there can be a kind of a settling back. It's like, oh, that's what's happening. So there can be a sense of ease, even in the midst of knowing that sense desire is present. As soon as we believe the story of sense desire, I need that thing, we're toppling forward. There's already a sense of unease, a sense of lack. So these energies of the hindrances tend to contribute to our sense of unease, of stress, of dissatisfaction, of suffering. And so as we understand them, as we learn how to be present with them, we learn about them. We learn about their energies. We learn about how they work. And we create, the mind creates a different relationship with them. So the Buddha suggested mindfulness of these hindrances. And when we are mindful of them, when we know that the hindrance is operating in the present moment, this is arising right now, sense desire is happening, ill will is happening, sleepiness is happening. When we're aware of that, those states of mind are no longer functioning as hindrances. They're no longer in the way of clear seeing. They actually are the compost out of which mindfulness can grow. So even the difficult states, even the hard states, when we turn our mindful attention to them, mindfulness strengthens, our understanding of our minds strengthens, and we cultivate a capacity to hold our experience from a different perspective, hold it from a perspective of ease, actually. So sloth and torpor as a particular hindrance, as a particular covering, and how to work with that, how to be present with that. So sloth and torpor includes a number of different states of mind. This morning I was just looking at the definitions for sloth and torpor and kind of finding a bunch of synonyms. And so this includes states like disinterest, laziness, apathy, boredom, complacency, dullness of mind, depression, as well as just regular old sleepiness. And so this is a state of mind that when we are caught in it, first of all, it tends to be related to low energy. You know, it can be that when there is low energy that these states of mind are present. I was just noticing this morning that I had low energy. And the mind automatically kind of kicked into a relationship. Oh, I have to give a talk. Oh, God, low energy is not okay. It's like, and this gearing up experience started to happen. That actually exhausted me even more. It's like, okay, well, you know, actually, I'm not giving the talk right now. I'm having breakfast right now. You know, can it be okay to have low energy? Well, yes, it's fine. It's fine to have low energy while I'm eating breakfast. That's okay. So there can be a relationship that we have with this state of mind that actually can exacerbate it. So I'll talk about that more in a bit. So sloth and torpor refers both to states of mind that tend to be low energy and also the body states of low energy. When these states are present, it can be it can seem challenging. It can be challenging, especially I'll just say it in this way. It can be challenging to have a clear mind when there's dullness of mind. It can be challenging to be present for what's happening when there is this low energy. in my own exploration of this, and actually this is one of my favorite topics to talk about, I have learned so much by allowing myself to not fight or resist low energy, but to explore what's happening in that state. And so what I've seen in my own experience is that the main obstruction around the state of low energy, the thing that turns low energy into a hindrance is often around resistance and around the story. So often we have the feeling or the thought, how many of you have had the thought, I'm too sleepy to meditate? I would think that would be 100% of you. Pretty much, I think at some point or other, most people have had that thought. And yet, what I'd like to propose is the possibility that if you're having that thought, you are aware that sleepiness is there. So maybe there's an idea in your mind about what meditation is supposed to be, and your idea of that doesn't include being sleepy. So one analogy I sometimes use is around a mirror. It's like sleepiness is kind of like, well, let me just use the analogy of a mirror to begin with. A mirror, the mindfulness is kind of like a mirror. It reflects whatever's happening. It reflects pleasant things. It reflects unpleasant things. The reflection is not, I mean, the mirror doesn't care what it's reflecting. It could be a decaying corpse. The mirror is neutral about that. It simply reflects. It could be a beautiful landscape. The mirror is neutral about that. It just reflects. The job of the mirror is to reflect. Much as in mindfulness, this capacity of mind that can know what's happening in the present moment, that capacity that knows doesn't have an opinion about what it knows. Its job is just to know. And so it's kind of got that neutrality of the reflecting power of a mirror, this capacity of mindfulness. And now think about that mirror again. After you've taken a shower in the bathroom, you know, it's like covered with steam. So that mirror, from our perspective of standing in front of the mirror, it's like the mirror is not doing its job. The mirror, I'm not seeing. The mirror is not able to reflect what's in the room anymore. And yet, if you think about what the mirror's job is and what the mirror is actually doing, it's actually doing its job perfectly. It's perfectly reflecting the steam. It's doing its job. It's reflecting every drop of water on that mirror perfectly. It's just not doing the job we want it to do, which is to see ourselves or to see what's in the room by looking in the mirror. And this is much the same with the quality of a sleepy or dull mind. A lot of the time when we have this relationship, I can't meditate when I'm sleepy, or my mind is too dull, or there's too much low energy, the energy is too low to be present for what's happening. Usually there's some idea of what I'm supposed to be paying attention to, and that something else is not the sleepiness itself. In that state where low energy is present, sometimes the very easiest thing, if we can relax, the very easiest thing to know is, oh, sleepiness is happening. It's not hard to know that. Sleepiness is happening. This is what dullness feels like. This is what low energy feels like. If we have the idea when we're meditating that what I'm supposed to be doing is paying attention to the breath or some bodily experience, I'm supposed to have some clear perception of some experience, if we have that idea, then we will have trouble, because the like the mirror, you know, the mind has got this state of sleepiness or low energy that's kind of making it difficult to see other things clearly. But when we relax, sometimes we can just simply know. It's like, oh, this is fog. This is what fog is like. This is what dullness is like. This is what sleepiness is like. And so this is the first piece that I want to put into the room, the possibility that we can be mindful of sleepiness itself. We can be mindful of this state of low energy itself, much as I described this morning. It's like noticing that I was low energy. It's like, oh yeah, I can just know that I'm low energy. I don't have to change it. I don't have to do something with it. And not only that, I could eat breakfast while I had low energy. I mean, I didn't even like totally collapse. It's just like, yeah, I have enough energy to eat breakfast here. It was challenging, to think about. Actually, what was hard was to have the idea, in a couple of hours, I'm going to be sitting in front of the room giving a talk, and that takes energy. And I've got to have that energy, and I don't have that energy now, and so I'd better create it now while I'm eating breakfast. I'd better create that energy. What I saw as I explored this was that felt like this gearing up, this contraction, this tension, this pulling in that actually contributed to my exhaustion. And I didn't need that energy then. And so it was kind of like, okay, can I let go of that? And I've learned enough about this pattern in my mind and to also trust that when I get here, it's not like I'm going to fall asleep and I'm giving the talk. You know, here I am. It's actually giving the talk, creates its own energy. So this is an aside, but it popped into my mind, so I'll tell you this little story. There was a teacher. I heard this story from Gil. There was a teacher, I think he was a Korean teacher, who was giving a talk in English, and he had to search for his words, you know, so he wasn't a native English speaker, so he had to search for his words, and in the process of giving his talk, he actually fell asleep while he was giving the talk. And Gil's comment about that, which I've held in my mind, he said, I aspire to be so relaxed when I'm giving a Dharma talk that I could fall asleep. It's like, you know, okay, that's a real letting go of self if I could just fall asleep in the middle of giving a Dharma talk. Anyway, so being with sleepiness, not fighting it, not resisting it. Another thing about sleepiness that I've noticed, and in some ways the dull mind as well, these are different things in a way. I have different experiences of sleepiness and of dull mind. But in any case, in both cases, when there is resistance, when there's this idea, I'm too sleepy to meditate, I need to gear up, I have to pay attention to the breath while I've got this low energy. When there's resistance in the mind about that state of mind, the experience tends to be really unpleasant. Have you noticed this? In when there's sleepiness and you're meditating, sometimes it feels really unpleasant. Mostly that unpleasantness is related to the resistance and not to the state of sleepiness itself. And to some extent this is true with dull mind, although dull mind to me, or let's say low energy, because I think dull mind is more the low energy of the mind, and dull mind has a kind of unpleasant, thick quality to it. It's kind of feeling like you're wandering through mud. It's kind of heavy and thick. And so it can feel a little bit unpleasant, that dull mind. But I did notice at one point that when I reframed it and I recognized, well, the mind, it feels dull, but actually what's happening is there's very low energy in the mind right now. When I used low energy as my way of understanding the experience of of what was happening. Even the use of dull mind had a negative spin to it. You know, even as I acknowledged it, yeah, the mind is really dull right now, there was already resistance in that recognition. There was already the idea that something was wrong as I was recognizing it. And when I just recognized, okay, it's low energy, it had a much more neutral feeling to it. It wasn't so unpleasant. And so sleepiness, when we resist it, when we're actually physically sleepy, tired, when we're resisting that, it feels really unpleasant. But if we stop resisting it, and we all know this intuitively in a way, you know, when we lie down to fall asleep at night, it's pretty pleasant. And if you stop resisting, if you let go of the resistance of sleepiness, it feels really good. It's a very pleasant state of body, of mind. And so letting go of that resistance is one way in that I found to connect with the experience of sleepiness. Because when I let go of the resistance and can actually be present for it, boy, it feels good. So it's like, it's not so unpleasant to be present for it. Sometimes that letting go of the resistance and opening to, oh, this is what it's like to feel sleepy. Oh, this is, the body gets all soft and relaxed. And, oh, body kind of feels really soft. And then the mind starts going into these lovely, like, you know, vibratory waves. It's zzz, 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 zzz. Feels really good. And then you might fall asleep. Well, the good thing about meditating, you know, especially, I mean, if you're in a chair, you might like slump back and not know that you've fallen asleep. But if you're sleepy, sometimes I encourage people to sit with their back away from the chair because it does take a little bit more energy. And then if you fall asleep, you'll notice it. I mean, the dropping wakes you up. So, you know, this is a benefit of the sitting meditation. You know, if you're paying attention to sleepiness, the dropping will wake you up. And so I've done this, you know, I've explored, oh, this is what it feels like for sleepiness to descend. And then poof, I drop and then it's like, okay, that woke me up. Let me just do it all over again. You know, just the dropping actually generated a little bit more energy. So just do it all over again. When I did that, I remember I did this for one whole 45-minute period at one retreat. The first retreat where I really discovered it's possible to be mindful of sleepiness. It's like, I dropped a bunch of times, but when you drop, how long does that take? That's about what? A second? I was present for almost the entire 45 minutes with just the little losses as the mind dropped. As opposed to my previous relationship with sleepiness. How do I fix this? How do I change this? Resistance. Oh, this is bad. I'm not meditating. What's the problem? Sit up straighter. Open my eyes. Doing all of these things to try to fix it was in the way of actually being present. So this is one of my campaigns in my teaching, is to encourage people to try to have the interest to explore. If you ever have the idea, I can't meditate while X is happening, in this case, sleepiness, dullness, don't believe that thought. Question it. How might it be possible to be mindful while X is happening? This one reflection, first explored for me around sleepiness, has been so fruitful in my practice. I've learned so much. And so much about the beliefs in the mind that keep us from being present. The belief that we can't be mindful while we're sleepy, that's what keeps us from being mindful while we're sleepy. So exploring this. And there are times when you might find you've been asleep, like you know the bell rings and it's been like 2 seconds, you know. Like, okay, that was not being mindful while sleepy, you know. If you find that happening, that's probably a sign. And you know, what I usually suggest is first try exploring, being aware of this state of dullness, of sleepiness. First try that. And if you find it's not possible, then it's helpful to use some of the antidotes. Sitting up straighter, maybe doing some walking meditation, opening the eyes. The Buddha suggests squeezing the earlobes. I found this to be incredibly effective while I'm doing it. And then when I stop, I'll fall asleep again. Another exploration I've made at times that, you know, when I've been really sleepy is I'll open my eyes and then I'll discover, you know, it's like, okay, letting the light come in, opening the eyes is helpful because it lets light come in, and that sometimes adds a little bit of energy to the system. But I'll find I open my eyes and then try again. And so what I try to play with is like, can I notice when the eyes close? Can I notice that? And not trying to stop it, but just can I notice when that happens? And when I've played with that, there sometimes the mind is so sleepy that I don't notice it. But I keep trying. So just you can play with some of the antidotes. Let's see, what else? I want to talk about low energy as a separate thing from sleepiness. I talked a little bit about this gearing up process. I actually was noticing this morning that as that gearing up happened, you know, there was the low energy. But what I was noticing was there was this idea, oh, I have to give this talk. And as that thought happened, the mind projected into the future, thought, I need energy to do that. Don't have that energy now. Better find it somehow. And that actually that process of thinking about the talk was the whole, like, beginning of the cycle of where that low energy even came from. It's like the thought, I have to give this talk, was like the seed. And when I just sat there at breakfast and didn't think about the talk, and I just sat there and says, this is breakfast, low energy was not, that was not the experience. Actually, there was a kind of a lightness in the mind. There was a sense of presence and ease in the body. And so sometimes the relationship with low energy, sometimes there is just low energy, and I've experienced this in meditation a lot, and I'll talk about that, how I work with that in a moment. But sometimes, and especially in daily life, because we are engaging with activities and things we need to do, sometimes the very thought of all the things that we need to accomplish in a day, it's like just that thought will trigger a cycle that exhausts us because we are resisting perhaps or feeling like we have to have the energy that we need to do those things now. And so exploring how thoughts play into this low energy state. You know, what beliefs are there? What ideas are there? The low energy state itself, I've had on some long retreats. On one retreat a couple years ago, it was one of these retreats where it was just like the entire retreat, the mind and body were just in such a state of low energy. I don't know what was going on. There might have been a health thing going on or a hormonal thing going on. But anyway, it was one of my retreats where I really had to look at low energy. And there was a belief in the mind that this was a problem at times. I remember doing walking meditation, and it's like, it's just way too low energy. It's like the mind had a little belief that this is just way too low energy. I cannot pay attention to something with this level of energy. And there was some truth to that I could not consciously choose. I could not say, I'm going to pay attention to this right now. So there was not enough energy in the mind, apparently, to do that. But what I recognized as I was doing this walking meditation, and I was noticing this low energy, and I saw that this relationship, this is a problem. So I noticed that kind of belief in the mind, that the low energy was a problem, that I couldn't be meditating with the subtext of, in the way I want to be meditating. And what I noticed is I noticed that thought of, I'm not meditating in the way I want to be meditating. It's kind of like I was walking, seeing what's happening, hearing what's happening. It's like, wait a minute. Awareness is happening. Who's doing that? Do I need to be involved in the doing of this? And that was an aha moment. It's like, okay, there is low energy here, and seeing happens, and hearing happens. The activity of saying, I'm going to pay attention to the feet on the that might have been a little too much, but just being present for what the mind was already knowing, there was enough energy for that. I mean, I wasn't dead. I wasn't like falling asleep on the, there was energy for the mind to be receiving impressions. And the idea that I had to somehow do that was further exhausting the mind. So when I saw that, that was actually the moment when I recognized I needed to change my recognition of the state from dullness to just low energy. Because low energy was a much more neutral kind of interpretation of that state of mind. And so again, an encouragement to be interested in exploring when you get into states where you think it's not possible to be mindful. Look at the assumptions. Don't believe that belief. Let's see. So, also with respect to dullness of mind, there's some kind of classical ways to support, more as on, along the lines of an antidote. So I want to encourage you to explore the possibility of just pure mindfulness of the state itself as a kind of a first thing. Is that possible? And if it doesn't seem to be possible, if you get lost or if you find yourself falling asleep repeatedly or unable to be present for that, then there are some tools. I talked about some of the ones for sleepiness. Now I'm going to talk about some of the ones for low energy. One of the main tools that my teacher in Burma suggested for me when there was low energy was to just see if there could be a little bit more curiosity about, can I connect actually with the beginning of the breath? It adds just a little bit of more connecting energy in the mind. And that connecting energy can be a support for a raising of the energy in the mind. Just to choose, you know, so like, and this can be a challenge, but I have heard, I mean, I've used this myself, and I've heard other people talk about using this. It can be very effective to just pick some experience, and the breath is a good one. Like, okay, you know, the mind is dull, but can I know the first moment that the in-breath begins? Can I know the first moment that the out-breath begins? What are the sensations that tell me the in-breath is beginning? What are the sensations that tell me the out-breath is beginning? Just to add a little bit of kind of a little bit of focus in the mind, that can help to bring up the energy. Or if you're doing walking, you know, a little bit more clarity in, you know, noticing all the sensations of lifting, moving, placing. Joseph Goldstein tells a story that he had been experiencing days of sleepiness and low energy. And this was on a retreat with Saira Upandita, and Upandita was encouraging very slow movement. And he was moving pretty slowly, but he decided, actually, I'm going to slow it down even further. I'm going to just see if I can just notice every single little like movement as the foot comes up off the floor and moves. And just that interest, I think it really, in some ways, it's the interest and the curiosity that is the spark for a little bit more energy to come. So just that. He said it was like flipping a switch, that suddenly there was this a lot of clarity in his mind because he got curious about what are all the, let's slow it down, way down. See, can we really notice all of those sensations? So it almost seems counterintuitive that when there is low energy to try to make that kind of precise, focusing of attention. And yet what can happen if that's done skillfully, if that's not done out of aversion? Aversion will tend to, we often have a relationship of aversion to this hindrance. So we're compounding hindrances. We're bringing ill will in as well as the sleepiness in. And so if you can incline the mind towards a little bit more preciseness of looking at, what is that? Out of curiosity rather than, how can I get rid of this sleepiness? Let me dive in there. If there's an aversive quality to it, then that kind of movement will tend to constrict the mind a little bit. It'll be more like, I have to do this, as opposed to, wow, let's see if this can be, if I can know this. So it's more of a settled back kind of connect experience with this kind of just like gently touch, not let me hold on to the experience. So if it can be that movement of just connect, that gentle connect tends to build energy. If we're not doing it out of an aversive state of mind, it's like I sometimes also use an analogy around cultivating mindfulness with riding on a scooter. And when you're at a standstill on the scooter, one of these little kick scooters that you put your foot on the ground and just, like the ones that the kids ride, these razor scooters. So when you're at a standstill, you have to put your foot on the ground and push and push and push. And first you have to push and push and push and push. And that kind of effort, that little tap, 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 that takes some effort. You have to do that. But when you do it a bunch of times, just in little brief moments, it builds a momentum. It creates a momentum to do that. And then you can ride for a little while. And kind of similarly around using this little, can I just connect? Can I connect? Can I connect? It creates a little bit of a momentum of energy that can help to alter or shift the mind state of low energy or sleepiness. So that's probably enough for me. I'm curious about comments or questions around this topic.
I just have one comment. Is, the teacher Howard Cohn, is he said that besides the breath of how you described it, one thing that helps me is see if you can see the space in between in and out breath.
Yes.
That helps a lot.
Yeah, that's another kind of precising.
It's hard to see.
Yeah. How do you know that you're in that space? Yeah. And so that's a kind of adds some curiosity. I think curiosity is a great counter for this state of sleepiness. And for me, the curiosity about being with the state itself, I think that's probably a lot of why it becomes possible. It's like the curiosity just adds a little bit of a different energy to the mind. So yeah, the curiosity about that moment. Yeah.
Years ago, one of the first instructions I got on meditation, the teacher suggested, or really organized everybody to, and they were all novices at meditating, to stretch and sort of walk in place at the beginning and then sit and meditate.
Yeah,
and
that can raise the energy before
to raise
sitting.
The energy
yes.
level.
Yes.
I haven't used that. I hadn't even thought of it for a long time, but it does. I do remember it being helpful.
Yeah. Another thing that I just remembered after you mentioned that, a trick that my teacher in Burma gave was, walking meditation is also suggested often to kind of raise the energy. Walk backwards. Walking backwards will, like, really wake you up. It's so interesting, you know. It's like the mind is not used to this, so it gets really, I better pay attention. So, and I think, too, you know, some stretching or bending or some deeper breaths can also help. You can do things to help raise the energy, yeah.
I have one other question. Do you know when the translation of the Pali that used the English word sloth and torpor was created? It sounds very Victorian to me.
You know, it's possible.
Full of shame and guilt. At least those are the connotations I have with those two words.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think I'm not positive about this, but the first English translations from the Pali did happen around the Victorian era. Whether that was their translation, there were a couple of translators, whether that was their translation of those particular words, I'm not sure. I do know that the Bhikkhu Bodhi, who is the main English translator right now, he is using those terms. But, I think sometimes people tend to hold to terms that have been in the field just so that there's an understanding this is what we're talking about. And so, there have been some shifts in the translation between the Victorian era and the era now. But often those shifts happen around places where there was a new understanding about the word. And so, sloth and torpor, there's not so much a new understanding. But, you're right. I mean, and there's actually another, this is a separate topic, but there's another translation that has stayed from the Victorian era to now that I think really is problematic for us in the West. And that is, there are two qualities of mind that support our ethical sensibility. And those are in the Pali called Hiri and Otapa. A modern translation of those through Untanasaro Bhikkhu gives a modern translation of those as conscience and concern, where conscience translates our sense of, I've done something unskillful, and this is how it feels. It doesn't feel good to have created ripples in the world. So that's conscience. And concern is the movement of the wish forward. May I not create harm in the future? And so those are two wholesome qualities. The translation that happened in the Victorian era and that Bhikkhu Bodhi still uses are moral shame and moral dread, which to me, those don't sound like wholesome qualities. those sound like, do I have to? Do I have to have moral shame? But conscience, I can sign up for that one. So yeah, the translations are important, and that's why I tend to use low energy, sleepiness, dullness.
I prefer kinds of things, those terms. Thank you.
Yeah.
It occurs to me an alternative to sloth could be inertia. Okay, and perhaps not sure if I'm using this word correctly, but an alternative to torpor. Well, this maybe seemed too obscure, but the word lassitude came to mind.
Yeah, yeah. There's I think lethargy.
Lethargy, right?
Lethargy, yeah. Apathy.
Inertia and lethargy. I'm proposing those for the.
It's interesting though that the translations of sloth and torpor. I looked this up this morning. They're very similar in English, very similar words. There's not a lot of distinction in the definitions. They both refer to the mind that is lethargic, the mind that is apathetic, the mind that is bored, disinterested. It's that kind of state. And yet the term in Pali is tina mida, and the second term, mida, is used to mean drowsiness. And so it's got a separate quality, the mida. So, you know, sloth and torpor doesn't really capture the sleepy quality. Anyone else? Yeah.
I guess we'll find out if this is on. Is that
That's working, yep.
Great. This is really timely for me because I've actually been exploring different fears that I have and realized that getting really, really sleepy, especially if I'm out in public and have to engage or do something, and even on retreat too, if I have an interview, you know, or something like that, and I'm really tired, it's like, it's terrifying. I'll do anything to avoid it. And I'm curious about how to explore that without getting caught in the content of like, well, why am I afraid? Because I'm noticing that that's the thing that's going is like, well, I better figure out why. And it's like, how can I, in that state where I'm both anticipating the fatigue coming and then when I'm in it and experiencing the fear, how can I be mindful of both?
So the first thing I would encourage is, like, there's the experience of both of sleepiness that you may have fear about and the expectation of sleepiness that you would have fear about, right? So it sounds like you've got both happening. And so to recognize, the most important piece is to recognize, well, what's actually happening now, to turn the lens of mindfulness on the actual experience now, seeing if you can let go of the story. So let go of the idea, this is a problem. And also actually letting go of, and why am I afraid, in favor of, what does fear feel like? And that experience in the present moment may also include the sleepiness or low energy itself. It depends on the situation. It may not. I mean, it may be that it's all the projection. It's all the idea. I'm having an interview in 2 hours, and I'm going to have lunch before that, and I always get sleepy after lunch, and oh, no, you know, maybe I shouldn't eat lunch, you know, that kind of thing, right? I mean, so noticing the thoughts and seeing if you can let go of the thoughts and come into, what is it? Okay, so there's fear. What is that? And maybe it's not full-on fear. Maybe it's more like anxiety. So what's the flavor of that? How does it impact the body? How does it feel in the mind? You know, what is that experience itself? And just be present for that. So often it's helpful to be present for the relationship, you know, more than for the thing itself. If you've got a relationship of fear around sleepiness, if there's sleepiness and fear happening, then putting your attention on the fear, I mean on the sleepiness, may tend to just keep the fear going. So, like, take a step back. The sleepiness may stay there, it may not. You might be surprised, actually, when you step back and say, oh, well, what is it like to have the fear? Notice that. And, you know, if the low energy may still be there, you don't have to try to hold both of them at the same time. It's just like being aware of, okay, this is the fear. What's that like? Sometimes you may, in that exploration, also feel, oh, and there's low energy too. But it doesn't have to be like a trying to do both. So just see if you can turn to the relationship. Explore that without being in the story of the relationship. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes using the body can be very helpful. If you have a sense of where that fear state or that anxiety state lands in the body, maybe constriction of the throat or, you know, butterflies in the stomach, you know, whatever, that kind of thing. Acknowledging the physical sensations too. You know, that if you have a sense of how that is landing in the body. And one piece I found really helpful about that instruction around checking into the body. Sometimes if we're feeling an emotion and we have physical sensations associated with that emotion, we may be like noticing, okay, constriction in the throat, and so there's tightening in the throat, and there's, you know, this tightening in the stomach. But we may be kind of in our minds, oh, fear, that's fear in the stomach. But actually what it is constriction. So being clear about what the experience of body is fear is a mind state. Fear is something that happens in the mind. It impacts the body. But being clear of the distinction between what the body is experiencing and what the mind is experiencing. Sometimes the bodily sensations around emotions, two widely different mind states can have very similar physical sensations in the body. And so I've had it happen where I had this physical sensation in the body and I assumed I was having a particular mind state because of the context of the situation. And it was just like knowing, okay, yep, that's what's happening. And at some point I recognized, you know, something else is going on here and kind of took a bigger picture and recognized it was a completely different mind state. But there was a confusion, you know, that the body sensations for me in this case were between anxiety and rapture. The state of anxiety often creates this kind of quivering kind of feeling through the whole body. And the experience, the place that I was in a context where frequently anxiety arose. And so feeling that kind of sensation in the body, I was assuming it was anxiety. But when I actually looked more closely or stopped assuming it was anxiety more, like it's like, well, then it became clear. Actually, this is like rapture. It's the mind is actually in this state of delight and joy. And it's like I had completely missed it. So the clarity of when you're turning to the body, just being clear of what the body is, the body sensations are. Yeah. So those are some thoughts about that. And it's time to stop. So thank you.